Hello, and welcome to the Oasis Church podcast. This episode is part of our series, Shepherd King, exploring the life of David. Together, we'll be following the story of someone known as a man after God's own heart, through his highs and his lows, from field to wilderness to palace. As we do, we'll discover how, in both his successes and his failures, David points us to Jesus, the true King come to change everything for everyone. Thanks for joining us.
The reading today is taken from 1 Samuel 17, verses 32 to 51. "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth." But David persisted. "I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats," he said. "When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I have done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he's defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." Saul finally consented. "All right, go ahead," he said, "and may the Lord be with you." Then Saul gave David his own armour, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. "I can't go in these," he protested to Saul. "I'm not used to them." So David took them off again. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them into his shepherd's bag. Then, armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roared at David, "that you come at me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head, and then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us." As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath. David used it to kill him and cut off his head. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they turned and ran.
Good morning, everyone. Really good to be here. If you don't know me, my name's Adrian, and hopefully by the end of this morning, I'll get to know you if I don't know you already. Thank you so much, Davina, for reading the scripture over us. It's just good, isn't it, to have the Bible read over us and just to sit and allow it to just come and refresh us with the wonder of who God is. And we're in this series looking at the wonder of the life of King David, who we find as this shepherd king who ultimately reveals the true shepherd king, who is Jesus, who's longing to transform your life and my life. And maybe you've come this morning thinking, well, yeah, I don't know who David is, and I'm just trying to figure out who Jesus is. Well, my hope is that through this morning, you'll discover more of the wonder of who Jesus is and the kind of king he is and the way in which he wants to transform your life, as I know he's seeking to transform mine. But maybe you've come and you're like, yeah, I'm in. I'm already centering my life on Jesus. Well, my hope is today that we just discover something more of how Jesus is longing to liberate your life and my life. Because what we're gonna do is, if you like, I'm like literally a connection point between where we've been as we've gathered and sung our songs of worship to God, and where we're gonna land at the end as we come and share at the table together of communion, of bread and juice, as we remember and receive afresh of the wonder of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, and the fact that it transforms who you are and who I am. And in it, I want us to see, as I become this connection point, is that all that we've celebrated in of who God is and what God's done actually is to shape and change our lives forever. It's not just simply something we sing about. It's something that I believe we're called to experience. And through this story, I want us to discover something more of how God is longing for us to live in the fact that he is the miracle maker. And I want us to see that afresh today as we again look at this amazing story of David versus Goliath. And if you're around last Sunday, you'll know that Mike looked at this story and, if you like, took a zoomed out approach, the big picture, the macro look at this story, and how this story of David and Goliath is humanity's story in how we live with this accuser who's seeking to tear us down, living with the consequences of that, of death, and how David kind of steps forward and mirrors what Jesus will be, of this rescuer who comes, Jesus, in his life, death, and resurrection, and defeats the accuser and defeats death in order that everyone can know, through putting their faith in Jesus, life and life eternal that is characterized by Jesus' love and goodness. That's what Mike looked at last week. Obviously, he did it a lot better than that. And I'd encourage you, if you didn't hear it, go online and listen to it, because it would do your heart good. Or maybe you did hear it, and I'd say, go back and listen to it, because it would do your heart good to be reminded of who we celebrate in Jesus and all that he's accomplished. But this morning, what I want to do is take it from that big macro scale and kind of zoom in and look at it in the micro scale of this battle, as how the wonder of the victory that Jesus has achieved actually comes to play out in your life and my life. And I want us to do that as we look at the wonder of how David responds through this story and the change it brings to those around him and the victory he sees in the end that's going to point us to Jesus and the wonder of all that he does. You see, there are giants that we face. There are giants that we face. They may not be literal giants like that of Goliath. You know, rarely have I gone out and suddenly seen this like 8-foot guy or 10-foot guy stood there shouting, saying, "Come on, if you think you're hard enough, I'll wipe you from the earth, Adrian, like you're a dog." Like that, to be honest, I don't think that's ever happened to me. Genuinely never had that happen. Always going to look up for it. If it does, I'll keep you posted. But I tell you what, I've had many moments where I've faced giants that didn't look like Goliath, but they left me feeling like if I'd faced Goliath. And I wonder if you've had the same. You see, I found myself facing giants of accusation or fear or intimidation. You know that moment where it's just like, this thought comes to mind, who do you think you are, Hurst? Maybe it's not Hurst, because that's me. Who do you think you are? Do you really think you can make any difference here? Like that intimidation of, oh yeah, but if people really knew who you were? Like the giant of disappointment. Man, I've known that. Like where life doesn't quite go how I thought it would. You know, one of my stories, which is another story for another day, is I turned 50 this year. Woo-hoo! You'll get an invite to my party, but genuinely will. But when I hit my 40s, like literally, as I hit 40, I can honestly say up to that point, I'd never known suffering, really. But one of the things I've realized is my last decade has been one where I've become familiar with suffering. And as I've become familiar with suffering, I've had to face the giant that is disappointment. And it feels scary sometimes. What about the giant of shame? Shame that says, like, who we are is wrong. What about the giant of guilt that says, yeah, what we've done is wrong? And if people knew that. Or the giant of doubt or loneliness or pride or resentment. You ever known that giant? That one that says, well, it's all right for them. Always goes well for them. Like, don't they know who I am, what I have to endure? Like, no one truly understands me. Do you know that giant? I do. To be honest, I've known all of those giants and still do know some of them. And these giants leave us immobilized, hopeless, imprisoned. And it's in the face of those giants, I believe this story begins to bring and break light and bring hope and the promise of liberty. You see, in this story, I think there's this invitation, as we're going to go on to see as we look at the story, but in it is an invitation to not look within ourselves as we see the giants or to look continuously at the giant, but rather to look outside of ourselves as we are invited to the shepherd's table as we face the giants. Psalm 23:5 says this, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." This is a song that David penned. A song that he penned saying, hey, yet when those giants come, when those enemies feel like they're pressing in, God, you provide a feast, a table before me in their presence. Why? Because it's in that moment that I don't want to get focused on the giant. I rather want to come and sit and enjoy the meal you'll prepare for me. A meal that we're going to see by the end of this morning is a meal revealed. It's the simplest of meal of bread and juice. Profound, though. As it speaks of the wonder of who Jesus is, of all that he's given, all that we receive, both in what he has done, is doing, and will do. See, I want us to see through this story the wonder of what we experience in communion. See, through this story, I want us to see that what David had experienced and pens in the song, that you prepare a table in the presence of my enemies, is the feast in which he reveals through this story. A feast that is about remembering, resting, robing, and rescuing. Man, there's 4 R's to remember. It's as though Hearst kind of had a bit of fun there. He did. Those of you who are slightly concerned, I do sometimes think and speak to myself in third person, just for my own pure entertainment. You see, as we discover the wonder of this, of remembering, resting, robing, and rescuing, I believe it brings us freedom and hope from those giants that seem so imposing. So firstly, remembering. It says in verse 7, David says, "The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from the Philistine." Saul finally consented. "All right, go ahead," he said, "and may the Lord be with you." You see, this story starts out with the king who we're told is head and shoulders above everyone else in the land, Saul, nowhere near the battle with Goliath, like hidden, like doing his own thing, camped with his own people, letting all the rest kind of deal with that, and has got so desperate that he's willing to hear this young guy come to talk about how he could take on Goliath. And in it, Saul kind of is willing to hear him out, but isn't convinced. It's kind of like, yeah, I don't think we've got quite this desperate yet. And yet what happens in this moment is that Saul goes from a place of not wanting to even acknowledge the giant because he's so afraid to actually saying, hey, would you go? And I think God's going to be with you. Because what happens is David reminds him of the wonder and beauty of who God is as the delivering, rescuing God. See, for David, he just sees this individual and just says, yeah, I've kind of faced giants before. Giants that were lions and bears. Man, that's crazy, lions and bears. He said, oh, but don't think about the lion or bear. I want you to think about God. You see, God is the one who rescued me and delivered me. And he's going to do the same here. God is the one who rescues and delivers. And there's something in this story that as Saul hears it, it does something to his heart that causes him to suddenly go from, yeah, I think God could do this. See, remembering does that. Remembering the wonder of who God is causes us to suddenly realize, actually, yeah, God, you are the rescue and delivery. See, if we're always focused on the giant, we'll always be consumed by it. But when we begin to have our sight drawn and to remembering the wonder of the rescuing, delivering God that we have, whose name is Jesus, revealed in Jesus, that through his life, death, and resurrection caused each and every one of us to know liberty and freedom because of all that he has done. So much so that Paul, when he kind of trying to grapple with the wonder of what Jesus has done through his life, death, and resurrection, says, oh yeah, Romans 8, verse 1 says this, there is now no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus. When the giants come in all their shapes and sizes to condemn, Paul just says, yep. Yeah, they have no room here. Remember, you're in Christ. No condemnation. See, we're to remind ourselves as we come to communion, it's a moment where we remember the wonder of what Jesus has done through his life, death, and resurrection. And cause us not to focus on the giant, but rather to focus on the one who slays giants, who slayed every giant when he died, when he rose again. And we centered our life on him. He says, that's the life I've come to liberate you in. So we're to remind ourselves and encourage one another of our own stories of how Jesus has delivered us from fear, intimidation, disappointment, shame, guilt, doubt, loneliness, pride, and resentment. You see, each of us, I promise you, will have stories about that. I've got my stories. My stories that are like ones where I just thought, like, if people really knew that about me. Like I shared some of it 2 weeks ago in terms of fear and how both fear ruled me, but also I felt utterly ashamed. I was maybe a follower of Jesus and yet I allowed fear just to rule and reign freely in my life. I felt utterly ashamed. Utterly ashamed about things that have been spoken over me. I remember told this story before, aged 11 or 12, something around that age, and a teacher turning around to the entire classroom and just going around and saying to each pupil, obviously a bad day for them, and just went around each pupil and said, will not amount to anything, will not pass any GCSEs. Literally every single one. Pause on one and they say, you might pass some. Pause on another, I think you might get one. Next person, you will not pass anything. You will not amount to anything. They get to me and they say, I don't know, maybe you will pass one. I remember leaving, they just feel utter ashamed. Like, who am I? I will amount to nothing. So I did. It took me 10 years, maybe more, probably 20, to live free of that giant. How did I live free of it? Not by positive thinking, but not by going, looking in the mirror going, you're a strong and independent man who will amount to something. Whatever the world says, you are clever, Adrian. It wasn't that. It was I believed that Jesus, who died and rose again, had redefined me forever. And as such, I was now one who was more loved, more accepted than I'd ever dare to believe, and I had nothing to prove. Liberated me. Why? Because he's the giant slain one. We just reminded each other. He's the miracle-making, city-wall-shaking, prodigal-chasing, Lazarus-raising, destiny-waking, history-changing, powerful name of God. What's the powerful name of God? Jesus. We remember. Secondly, it's about resting. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Man, do you think about that? I promised Rob that I wasn't going to stand up. But it's going to happen. So you got David here, you know. I reckon David's about this high. He's like, yeah, there. You got Goliath, kind of really big guy. Come on, who do you think you are? Think you're hard enough? I'm going to treat you like a dog, break you, snap you, kick you away. David, not intimidated, just goes, doesn't even look at what he's wearing, just goes, oh, I come with God and all his armies. Man, what are you talking about? You're just by yourself, tiny guy. No, I'm with God. Like, David was resting in the wonder of who God is. Like, for him, as he sees Goliath, he thinks, yep, I've seen giants like you before. Lions, bears, you're all the same. You're just giants. But I know one who can defeat giants. I know one who is able to do more than I could ask or imagine. Why? Because he's over all, above all, and is able to bring victory in all. God. Like for David, he just stands there, he just rests. He doesn't seem like he's panicking at all. He's not like knees quaking, God, are you gonna turn up? No, he's just resting in it. He rests with confidence in the wonder of who God is. And we're to do the same. Look at the giant. We look to Jesus and we rest in who he is. We rest in the wonder of something that we keep discovering, that Jesus is enough. Full stop. We nearly got there, didn't we? Call and response time on Sunday morning at Oasis. We started with the song, Hurst is going to go there. Jesus enough. You're still not sounding convincing. Jesus enough. Starting to get there. Jesus enough. That's the deal. Jesus is enough. Full stop. Whatever the giant, he is enough. Always has been, always will be. Therefore, we get to simply rest with the shepherd Jesus in the wonderful reality, he is enough. Thirdly, robing. David, he picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them into his shepherd's bag. Then, armed only with a shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. There's this comical moment just before this where Saul like agrees to David fighting the giant and says, hey, if you're gonna fight the giant, you better look like him. Take my armor. Let's remember something about Saul. Saul, head and shoulders above everyone else in Israel. Really tall, kind of like a giant. And his armor must have been pretty big. And then he gives it to this young guy, David, and says, put this on. And I kind of imagine like David like putting it on, but he's thinking, man, this is clunking around. This is just not working. But also he's just thinking, why am I going in this? Like robed in what Saul wears. Like this isn't how it works. So he's cased it off and goes dressed how he's always gone dressed, as a shepherd. That's why it keeps coming back to just the beauty and wonder of description of who he is as he goes to face Goliath. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt this guy, he's got a staff, dressed in his shepherd clothing, dressed with his shepherd bag. Wonder what the bag looked like. I often wonder that. Do you like the bag and the stones? You know, he's just there. Why? Because he's robed like a shepherd. And in the same way, so are we. We're meant to be those that are robed in the shepherd. See, the shepherd King Jesus comes and causes us to be robed in him in order that his identity becomes our identity. Wow. His identity is our identity. As the Father has eternally loved the Son, he now eternally loves you and I. That his righteousness becomes our righteousness. Like, Jesus is perfect. His perfection now clothes us. Like, how often do I forget that, though? How often do I kind of seek to pick up my equivalent of Saul's armor? Looking to myself or others or a method or, like, I don't know if you've ever had this, but it's like, if that. That's what I often call it, if that. I don't know what the that is, but it's like, if that happened, then life would be really good. If that, if I got that house, if I got that amount of money, if I got that car, if I got those possessions, if I had that kind of life, if I got that experience, if I had that start, if that. Oh man, then I could defeat giants. But it never works. Like, maybe I'm not alone, maybe you're there as well. Why do we, like, allow ourselves to be robed in the stuff that will never deliver us? When we have one who is our shepherd, who says, come, I'm hiding you in me. My identity is now your identity. My righteousness is now your righteousness. And finally, rescuing. Verse 50, so David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. David kills the giant. Or does he? That's why this is here. You see, yes, he will use the sword in a moment to chop off Goliath's head. He's going to use Goliath's sword. That's kind of ironic, isn't it? There's a whole thing there, but I'm not going to go there. But the point is this bit. Because this was meant to resound out for all of God's people in that moment and for all of God's people throughout time. Because what I was saying is, yep, this had nothing to do with David. Military might. It had everything to do with God. This was God's victory, not David's. This was God who is the rescuer, God who is the deliverer, not David. You see, God is one who is continuously a rescuing, delivering God. That's why Jesus came. To reveal the nature of who God is. God is a God of loving kindness who continuously comes to rescue and deliver. And therefore we get to live in the wonder that Jesus is our rescuer. It is who he is and what he does. See, Jesus has defeated the accuser and death forever, but he's continuously seeking to cause the wonder of that victory to be worked out in the wonder of our lives, in order that when these giants come, he calls us to know, yep, yeah, I can deliver this. I can rescue you from this, because I always have and I always will. Therefore, we come knowing that God is a rescuer. See, the giant, when it comes in, I don't know which giant it is. Let's pick one, shall we? Which one shall we pick? Doubt. Let's pick that one. Doubt comes. Oh, there's no one there. Nothing can help you. You're alone. What doubt does is it silences us. But Jesus says, he comes. And he says, speak it out. Speak out your doubts. And as we speak out our doubts, we then get to remember. Get to remember the wonder of who Jesus is. Jesus, you're the rescuer. Not whether I feel like it. It's just who you are. I love the wonder in terms of dealing with doubt is that when Jesus has been resurrected, and that story from the moment, and you can read it in the accounts of the gospel, from the moment of his resurrection to the moment of him going back to be with the Father, there are doubters continuously there. Jesus isn't freaked out by them. He isn't like slapping them around the head, going, come on, pull yourself together. He's just like, yep, I'm okay with this. Why? Because I can defeat doubt in the wonder of my presence with you. The shepherd's table. That's where we get to. Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. After supper, he took another cup of wine and said, this cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood, which is poured out as a sacrifice for you. So Jesus instigated a meal that was forever to proclaim he's the giant slayer. That when we come and gather and receive it, we get to do these things. We get to remember. Remember the wonder of Jesus' death and what it's caused to happen. Get to rest in the wonder that Jesus, you're enough. That your death and resurrection speaks life to me. Get to be robed again, remembering Jesus, as I eat and receive you, I remember I'm forever yours. As we drink that cup, we get to remember Jesus, nothing separates me from you. You will forever rescue me.